Journalist, author, and historian Ed Maloney, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. The question of double standards, Ed, is one which will come up again and again in this campaign. Good enough to be Deputy First Minister in the North, hold high elected office, effectively joint Prime Minister of Northern Ireland with Peter Robinson, but not good enough for us down here.
Well, you know, yes, he has done a very, very good job as Deputy First Minister in the North Island Power Sharing Executive, and obviously his role there has helped to cement the peace process. And now that he's running in the South for the ARIS, for Phoenix Park, obviously, you know, there will be questions about his past that will come up. These things are inevitable. You know, when you run for high office, in any state, your record is going to be scrutinized. Your statements are going to be scrutinized, and you know, that's part of the game, and you have to expect that.
But his complaint is that only his IRA past is being scrutinized, and the good work, as he put it in his launch statement, 20 years, two decades of peacemaking is kind of being swept under the carpet. What do you think of that argument?
Well, I mean, I think it's inevitable that his IRA past is going to be scrutinized. And, you know, when you're dealing with that type of subject, it's, you know, almost impossible to ascertain or to get 100% of the truth or the fact in any situation. But and that really doesn't bother me so much, you know, because I know a lot about Martin McGuinness's IRA history, and, you know, a lot of it is very controversial and will be debated for time immemorial. But I would prefer to look at what's on the record in terms of what he has said about this. And, you know, I think the reason why you've asked me to come on this this slot this morning was because of a piece I wrote on a blog over the weekend, pointing out that at the Savile Tribunal, Martin McGuinness was asked very specifically by one of the counsel at the tribunal when he actually left the IRA, and his answer was that he left the IRA in the early 1970s. Well, that's a statement of fact, which you know, a lot of people, I think, would take issue with, and you know, for me, that's much more of an important indicator of the sort of problems that Martin McGuinness is going to have in this election contest, rather than did he or did he not lure Frank Hegarty to his death in Derry? Because, you know, I think when a politician is running for high office, you're entitled to look at what he has said, and if the statements that person has made don't jive with the facts as they are known and as accepted, then you're entitled to ask other questions about their integrity and about their...
Yeah. But Ed, it is not really knowable whether or not he was on the Army Council of the IRA after 1973-74 or whether he was Chief of Staff. That's,
it was certainly known that he was a member of the IRA. One can argue about, you know, which particular offices he held in the IRA and for how long he held them. But there's absolutely no doubt that he was a member of the IRA and also, I think, a senior member of the IRA. Most people would accept that. And indeed, his claim to have played such a major role in the evolution of the peace process, you know, is absolutely justified. But the reason why he was able to play that role was because he was a trusted and respected colleague of people at the higher reaches of the IRA. If he had left the IRA in 1970, in the early 1970s, as he told Savile, imagine him then coming to the IRA Army Council 30 years later or whatever it was and saying to them, listen, guys, I think it's time that you changed your direction here, that you gave up all this killing and bombing. What's their response going to be in those circumstances? Circumstances, they're going to say, who the hell are you? Sure, you left us 30 years ago. What gives you the right to tell us to do anything?
You believe that circumstantial evidence which points to a much longer membership and high involvement in the IRA. But Danny Morrison makes...
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we know all the stories of, you know, various people in MI6, for example, who had private conversations with Martin McGuinness in the years leading up to the first ceasefire in 1994. Do you really think, or does anyone seriously think, that these people at MI6 would go to talk to Martin McGuinness if he was a guy who had left the IRA in 1972 and had no influence on the organization? Absolutely not. The reason why they went to speak to him was because they knew he was in, A, the IRA, and B, in the leadership of the IRA, and therefore was a person of influence.
But Danny Morrison made the point, whether he left in 1974 or 1994 or 2004 or indeed 2010, this discussion would still be going on.
It may well be, but, you know, it's a question really of honesty, integrity, and the parallel that I always draw, and I think this one makes absolute sense to people, and they can then understand why it's an issue. But if Barack Obama, running for president, had made a statement saying that, listen, the fact that I look like an African-American is a freak of nature, it's an accident of DNA. Both of my parents were actually white. If he said that, and that flew in the face, as it does fly in the face of every known fact about his life, every accepted notion of his life, that his father was, in fact, Kenyan from Africa and was black, and that's how he is half African-American. If he made a statement like that, he would be scrutinized like nobody's business by the media, and his honesty and integrity and therefore his qualification for high office would be automatically brought into question. If he can't tell the truth, if you can't tell the truth about a central defining aspect of your own life, then can you really trust the same person to tell you the truth about rape or about tax?
Well, the question of telling the truth is something I know that will be parsed and analysed over the course of this campaign. But in terms of the provenance of such a candidate, I mean, going back to, as Danny Morrison did, Sean McBride being a minister in inter-party government, people with a track record of if you like, what would be called terrorism, being acceptable as candidates and as ministers. So what's different about this?
I have no problem. I don't think, you know, anyone really should have a problem in people who used to be, you know, one type of person change and become someone else. That's fine. That's the way, you know, human life happens, you know, and Ireland, as we know very well, is full of political examples of people like that. I mean, you know, Michael Collins was a very ruthless IRA leader who ordered the deaths of, you know, goodness knows how many people. Yet he was able to come to terms with peace and become pragmatic and change and put all that behind him. That's fine. And Martin McGuinness has done the same as well. You know, the difference between him and Michael Collins is that Michael Collins never said, oh, by the way, I left the IRA in 1916 and never had anything to do with it for the rest of my life. Martin McGuinness is actually saying the equivalent of that. And that's the issue that I think we should be concerned about.
We know that Gerry Adams, because he has consistently denied he was ever a member of the IRA, and he has accrued to himself some problems on foot of that. People who are disappointed in him and maybe furious with him for disavowing a heritage which they think is proper, right, and almost heroic. He said, you know, he wasn't a member of the IRA. I remember when we talked to him prior to his election, we had an outside broadcast, and he explained all the privations that his family had gone through at the hands of the Northern authorities and the British authorities. And I had to ask him the question, why wasn't he in the IRA? If he, you know, most normal people under that situation might have been tempted to join. What do you think is going to happen to Martin McGuinness if there are people out there who know or think they know that he was in the IRA for longer than he claims? I mean, is there anyone out there who want to come back and bite him?
Well, there might well be. And indeed, you know, this whole business about Frank Hegarty and his family is an example of the sort of thing that can happen. But I think Martin McGuinness is in a slightly different position than Gerry Adams. Gerry Adams has given this sort of blanket denial, which, you know, has irritated, maddened, infuriated a lot of his former comrades, and I think this probably caused him a great deal of difficulty. Martin McGuinness's position is slightly different in the sense that he when he appeared at the Savile Tribunal, it was to actually admit what everyone knew, that he was in the IRA at the time of Bloody Sunday. And very, very few people, least of all in the media, actually noticed that he added this little bit at the end. Oh, and by the way, I left it very shortly afterwards. So the general perception of the difference between Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness is that, well, Gerry Adams has been untruthful about his history in the IRA, Martin McGuinness has actually told the truth. I was trying to point out in my blog that actually, you know, he wasn't entirely truthful, that he told the Savile Tribunal that he'd left in early 1970s. He didn't give a specific year in that exchange with the counsel and at the tribunal, but sometime in the early 1970s. Mm. That really didn't get as much notice as possibly it deserved, and really all I was doing was bringing that to people's attention.
You say that whether or not he's telling the truth is at the heart of this, but is there not a graver difficulty, and that is that if Martin McGuinness, if he was a member of the Army Council of the IRA, or even Chief of Staff or Deputy Chief of Staff, or having some incredibly important role, at the time, for example, of Enniskillen, when people at prayer at a cenotaph were bombed and killed and maimed, those kind of, you know, there would be a list of atrocities that would then attach to his name, which do not attach to defending the people of Derry on Bloody Sunday.
Yes, indeed. There is a big difference there. But you see, he's left himself open to that by denying that he was in the IRA at the time of Enniskillen, or at the time of any other violent act that took place. For example, the human bomb killing of Patsy Gillespie. What was his role in the IRA at that stage? The reason why those become, I think, bigger issues, as they have become bigger issues for Gerry Adams. I think if Gerry Adams, for example, had taken the stand very early on, that was traditional amongst IRA people up until his leadership, which was when they were asked whether they were in the IRA not. IRA or not, they would basically give you an answer which was mind your own damn business, right? They wouldn't deny it, they wouldn't admit it. He changed that by actually denying it, and he's caused himself all sorts of difficulties. And I think the reason why Martin McGuinness is going to get into trouble over all these issues about what happened and where he was and what his responsibilities were at certain points in time derives out of the fact that he says actually he wasn't involved in the IRA at that stage. And I think if he had not given that answer, in fact, the counsel at the tribunal offered him the opportunity to avoid answering the question, and he didn't take up that opportunity.
I followed up that transcript. All right, Ed, thank you very much for joining us from New York. I know that Danny Morrison has been listening to all of that. Danny, that point made by Ed Maloney, which is, you know, telling the truth about your history, whether it's noble or ignoble, particularly if you've turned from gunman to statesman, that's his problem. But equally, we can understand that he'd have fewer questions to answer about events like Enniskillen if he could say, well, I had no truck with the IRA at that time.
It doesn't matter if he was in the IRA or not at any particular time. The point is, as Republicans, we were involved in the conflict in the North, in which Enniskillen happened, in which Patsy Gillespie was killed, in which Franco Hegarty was killed. Each one and each death was a personal tragedy, and I wish it had been avoided, and possibly it could have been avoided, had we a settlement on Good Friday 1969, like the Belfast Agreement, and perhaps no one would have lost their lives. But we can't turn back the clock, and the fact of the matter is, all of these things happened. But, you know, and by the way, I'm a bit disappointed that Ed refused to come on and debate with me, because I would have liked to have had the opportunity. Because Ed's, the thing about it is, when you're talking about the truth and confessions, is that there is a big danger here. We're all concentrating on Martin McGuinness only, and we're not, as I pointed out earlier, Martin McGuinness did not cause the troubles, but the troubles caused Martin McGuinness to become involved, as thousands did. Now, there are a number of Republicans who have participated in the Boston College debacle, in which they have made, apparently, self-incriminating statements, confessions, but also they've implicated others, by the way, and this goes back over a 20, 30-year period. And the British government is now, through the Department of Justice in the United States, trying to seize these confessions. So the British government is still out for retribution. There's a young man, Jerry McGeoch, is in McGabry Prison currently because of an incident that occurred 30 years ago. And, of course, in the case of Rita O'Hare, 40 years after an incident in Andersonstown, she's still not allowed to go back to the north.
Can I say there are priests in jail for abuses that took place 40 years ago, and, you know, because they were children and didn't get...
Yes, but they're not...
...the nerve to report it. But it has happened.
But, Pat, there are not police abusers in jail. There are not British Army torturers in jail. There are the assassins who killed people, and the British intelligence services who armed loyalists. In the 1990s alone, when Martin McGuinness was trying to bring about peace, loyalists killed 400 Catholics with these guns that were brought in through British intelligence. Now, the British government must know about that. They must know who was responsible. So Martin McGuinness has proposed, yes, let's all tell the truth, and then let history and society judge. What we have here is a run against one person who was prepared to go to jail, was prepared to be killed. I mean, Gerry Adams was shot 5 times. Our county councillors, our city councillors have been assassinated. The 9-month pregnant woman, wife of a Sinn Féin member in Tyrone, was shot dead by the UVF with guns brought in from South Africa by British intelligence. So, yes, open it all out. And if you want to have this debate throughout the presidential campaign, I welcome it, because I do think some of the attitudes being revealed by commentators do reveal a hidden partitionism. Yeah. And I think let's discuss it, because it gets to the root of the 26-county state, the Irish Republic, was founded. The IRA were using the same example to bring about freedom and justice for their people.
Just to ask you then, finally, Danny, what is your belief about Martin McGuinness's belief in the integrity of the 26-county republic? I mean, it would be a supreme irony were he to be president of a republic that he didn't actually believe in, to be commander of an army, Óglig na hÉireann, where he might still have an affection for the crowd that he called Óglig na hÉireann, which was the provisional IRA.
Sinn Féin, sure. One of the reasons why Republican Sinn Féin condemned Sinn Féin and split in 1986, because Sinn Féin ended its abstentionist policy. And Sinn Féin, of course, have been evolving over the years. And I recognise, I used to, and sometimes still slip into the habit of referring to the Free State. But, I mean, it is a republic, and the vast majority of people of 26 counties recognise it as a republic. I just don't like when people use terms like national wages agreement that stop at Dundalk, or national elections that don't include us in the north.
All right, we will leave it there. Danny Morrison, thank you very much for joining us.